this sound, that sound, and the sounds we can't even identify. You're listening to Ann Carlini and Steve Black's weekly podcast. The Sound Of.
So, Ann, I got a chance to interview my rising country star cousin, and I wanted you to be involved, but it just didn't work out timing-wise.
Yeah, which made me sad, but I hope to meet her in the future and see her perform.
Yeah, yeah. And I even got to tell her it was fun to see her in her natural habitat because, you know, I'd seen her perform since she was a kid in the kitchen or on the porch. But, you know, now she's signed with Warner Nashville, which is, you know, probably the biggest label in country music.
Was she the type of kid that was always performing around the house or people were asking her, hey, Ashley, why don't you sing that song for us or play this tune?
Yeah, and she talks a little bit about that in the interview. But, I mean, you know, her management's the same management as Metallica and Red Hot Chili Peppers. Her producer's the guy who just produced the last Hailstorm album. I mean, so this is kind of, she's turning into like a really big time thing, and that's exciting because she's always been our big time thing, you know?
Well, that's kind of sort of a big deal to have a producer of that magnitude.
Yeah. Yeah, Jay Joyce, he's done a lot of, well, he did a lot of country albums. I just don't remember their names.
So,
I just don't. But so this was kind of fun because I don't do country like even a little bit, but I did get to interview Ashley. So this is what that sounded like.
We don't want a drunk dial and a good friend we ain't seen in a while.
Well, I can't tell you how many hundreds of times I've sat in hotel rooms or backstages or buses to do interviews, but never before with a family member.
Never. I've never done this with a family member either.
It feels a little strange, doesn't it? It feels a little strange.
I don't feel like I have to fudge anything.
Miss Ashley McBride.
Hi, cuz.
This is really fun. This is really fun. First of all, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
I'm good. I've just been here for a little bit and freshening up before the show, and I feel fine. I was really sick when radio tour kind of slowed down.
Right.
And then I got that virus that wouldn't let anybody go. And then
right.
I got better. And I feel like now my immune system is much improved. I could probably lick a doorknob at a truck stop and not get sick now.
Please
<That's>
don't
disgusting.
Try. Please don't try such a thing.
Gross.
Well, let's dive in to your musical background, because to me, there's a couple of things that happen. There's that page-turning moment when you see something, you hear something, you feel something, and you go, ah, I'm going to be a musician.
Yes.
And for other people, it's like learning a language. You don't say, well, when did you learn a language? It just happens. It's just part of your life.
Yeah.
And to me, that second thing is more descriptive of you. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was just constant. It was there from the start. I was little, and we have these old VHS videos. Mom had this giant camcorder that you had to carry like on your shoulder, and she's got this video of Dad, and he's standing at this little dresser, and I'm carrying a mandolin around at 3 years old, and I stop and I go, Daddy, can I have a pick? And then I just walk off like banging on this mandolin. I know it wasn't good, but I figured out how to make sounds and stuff. But yeah, we were at bluegrass festivals from, gosh, I was 3 days old, 4 days old when I went to my first bluegrass festival. It just stayed that way.
Right.
And there were bands like the Tennessee Gentlemen, and they would let me get with my plastic guitar on the side of the stage and pretend to play with them. And Mom said she saw it on my face one time. We were at Wooten's in Arkansas.
Right.
And I was playing next to Stuart, the bass player, and my little yellow plastic guitar, and they got done with a song and everybody started clapping and cheering. She looked over at me and she said, I lit up.
Did you think it was for you?
Oh, yeah. Definitely thought it was for me. Mom was like, oh, boy, she's got the bug.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Speaking of audiences lighting up, you're at a really wonderful stage now where you're getting enough airplay to where people, at least, I don't know, half the room is familiar with.
Yeah.
And it's going through that transition has to be a real interesting thing to witness.
Yeah, because it's really strange now when people, like a crowd of people, not just like three people,
right.
But a crowd of people sing your song back to you. And we have this, we'll look all across the stage at each other like, are you seeing this? Are you hearing this? And my guys are like, yeah, we're all on stage together. We're all seeing this. And we just put another episode of Home Sweet Highway out, and it was about the Gramercy Theater when we played up there for the first time. And that crowd sang it at the top of their lungs. All of the words, not just the chorus or just the hook.
Right.
And I said Dahlonega right. Because it's not an easy word to say.
That silly city.
I know. If it's a true story, so we couldn't change it. And plus, nobody wants to hear little dive bar in like a really normal word. That's, I don't want to dog anybody's town, but you know.
You mean you're not changing it? It's not going to be a little dive bar in Detroit tonight and then Chicago tomorrow and then.
It won't, no. It won't bounce as good. Maybe I can find another song to put the word Detroit in, though.
Speaking of just a single word, sometimes songs come very, very quickly. They can be, mm-hmm. The bones of it can be done in 15 minutes. And in other cases, you know it's there, but you know it's not right. And then just the right word or the right harmony or the right phrase will just be that magical piece of the puzzle. Talk about what that's like when that hits.
There's a song that I wrote with Nicolette Hayford. It's not on this record. Hopefully it'll be on the next one, though. She came in and had been to, I want to say Italy, and went to this rifle factory with her boyfriend. And she was like, man, they had this really cool rifle called the Mississippi Flyway. And I was like, whoa, when are we writing Mississippi Flyway? And we sat down and popped it out right then.
Right.
And we had to do a little bit of research on it, too, once we started writing. Like, we didn't want to, what if this is a real thing? And we're going to look ignorant for writing it this way. And it is a real thing. It's the migratory pattern in the sky that birds use along this part of the country.
Right.
But it's also a rifle. And it's, that was one of those things where she said the word and we were both just drooling. Like, when, how? We have to start writing this right now. And then there were some songs when we were recording this record with Jay Joyce, like Radioland. We love that song and we've always played it a certain way. And I was like, it's just not quite, it might not make it to the record when we got done with it. Like, it's just not quite right. And then Jay did the weirdest thing. He said, you guys sound great. Play less.
Interesting.
Everything you're doing, just do less of it in this song. And then we did, and then it turned into this cool little breakdown part where we do that Radioland, and it made all the difference in the world. And all he did was have us do less, proving that less is more.
Yeah, if it's done right.
Yes.
You know, I like to say bigger is better as long as it's better.
That, yes, exactly.
You know,
I'm going to use that
because you know that's true sometimes.
Yeah.
There's a real skill to writing a song, and we'll use The Jacket as an example. I just happen to know enough of the background of that to know that that's a real item. It's a real personal thing to you.
Yeah.
So it would be very easy to write a song that only made sense to you. But you know you've got magic when you hear other people say, oh, I thought that was about my cousin, or I thought that was about my father or whoever. That's the magic, to take something very specific from your life and make it so available and adaptable to everybody else.
I think it's the honesty of it, too. That's what makes it easier for people to attach, because there's nothing contrived about it. It was Sam Mahan's jacket, and Billy Black had it, and then I had it, and it was a really important piece to me. And some people, it wasn't a jacket. Some people, it was a blanket, or it was a hat, or a pocket watch or something. So it doesn't matter what that one thing is. You have something that you're that emotionally attached to. And I think us being brave enough to ride it that way, specifically with the jacket in the room, this is where this jacket has been. There's blood on the collar. And I would have loved to have seen Billy Black crack somebody's nose, you know? I think the honesty of it is the relatability of it.
And Billy Black, by the way, is our uncle.
Our uncle.
Yes. See, you and I could throw out names like Sam Mahan, and we know who it is.
We know who that is, yeah. It's all family
members. But whoever's,
members,
tuning in, they don't know who that is.
Yeah,
so.
Just all family members. It was an heirloom, and sadly, it was stolen not too long ago.
Just recently. You know, proving again, there's a really old blues song, the day I heard it, it stuck with me. But the chorus of it is, I've never seen a U-Haul behind a hearse, meaning you can't take it with you.
Absolutely.
And as much as the jacket means to you, the fact that it's gone, none of those memories are gone.
No.
None of its relationship to you is gone. None
and
of its vibe
hopefully
is gone.
Hopefully it's keeping the cold Tennessee winter off of some hipster's back. Because it is like all the vintage shops, all the hipster places have a picture of the jacket hanging in their shops. Because you know some really hip guy is going to walk in there with a tall PBR and like overly thick glasses and be like, check out this cool jacket.
Right.
And if I ever get it back, it'll probably have tire marks on the back from somebody running him over. That's Ashley's jacket.
And you never know. That's the magic of the world.
And I dreaded telling Uncle Bill that that the jacket had been stolen out of my truck. They busted out my window and took it. And man, you'd really have to like a jacket to break somebody's truck window and take it. They took everything, though, out of the truck.
Oh, okay.
To my surprise, instead of him being really, really angry or really, really upset, he said, it has other adventures. It, like, I just like, I would tear up now. It has other adventures. I'm like, oh.
That does sound like Uncle
Bill.
That's
so Uncle Bill, yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, I had a guy break into my vehicle once to like steal the radio. Didn't even look to see what was on the floor. I had a $900 microphone on the floor, and they just left it. Like, oh, thank you.
Wow.
Mom. I'll keep the mic.
So, they did leave a few things in my truck, but most everything was gone. They left a bottle of 18-year Elijah Craig in the floorboard. And I'm like, well, whoever broke into my truck doesn't know their bourbons.
Rookies.
Yeah. It's not easy to break a car window.
No.
It takes work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. I hope they're warm.
We'll wish them the best.
Yes.
All right. Before we sign off and I shake your hand and say thank you, we'll take one more piece of our history, one more piece of our past.
What do we got?
What do you think our grandfather would say if he were in this room? You've got a 26-year radio survivor in an industry that continues to get smaller that somehow made a living out of doing radio. And his sweet little Ashley writing songs that are changing the damn world.
Yeah. Wow. Shoo, Papa would probably say, how about that? You'd be really happy. I could remember sitting on the side of his bed listening to cassette tapes with him, and that was, man, music was just a part of our family. I know he would be really tickled that you and I are sitting. He is really tickled that you and I are sitting in a hotel room right now.
Right. And talking about music.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we have to add fishing to it to complete,
of course,
the resume. But
yeah, I'm going fishing in May. That way we'll round that out.
Great to see you, my lady.
Thanks for being here with me.
You got it.
Ooh, that got me.
We had one country station you could drive and listen all the way to Watertown. Mama Capoli's playing in the kitchen, turned up just a little too loud.
The sound of... The Sound Of's weekly top seven lists. Here are Ann Carlini and Steve Black's selections from 7 to 1.
Well, this is going to be an interesting segment since Steve just declared to the world that he knows nothing about Southern music. Country music, I should say.
Yeah, I do pretty good with Southern rock, I think.
But I think that Ashley, your cousin, is going to introduce you to a whole new world of music, which I think is exciting.
It is fun. I mean, I have learned a couple of things just based on, you know, she went up and sang a song with Eric Church. I had no idea who the hell he was. So
really?
First time I ever heard Eric Church was through her.
You know, Eric Church performed with Lizzie Hale.
Oh, there you go. There's the tie-in.
So he likes his rock and roll, Eric Church.
Nice.
In fact, there are some people who consider him more rock than country. So our next segment is not country rock, but Southern rock bands.
Yes.
And there is a distinction.
I totally agree.
So just to give you an example, the Eagles would be an example of country rock.
Agreed.
Okay. But Southern rock would be something like Lynyrd Skynyrd or that. Okay. So we decided to name our top seven Southern rock bands.
Like it.
So I'm going to start off, though, by just mentioning a couple of bands that I think were the first really to introduce that sound into the rock and roll world.
Okay.
And one of the first was The Band.
Okay.
And The Band was really Levon Helm, who was a drummer and singer, really was the only one from the South. He was from Arkansas. But they used to back up Bob Dylan. And so they were so often called, hey, The Band, that
right.
they just decided to call themselves The Band. But they did The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down. You know, I mean, they really introduced that Southern flavor to a rock audience. And then the next band is a band called Little Feet, who had a guitar singer called Lowell George.
Right.
And they did a song called Dixie Chicken, which I still love.
That's funny. I don't know that one.
No?
No.
I
know the band name. Like, I've heard people mention Little Feet, but no.
You don't know I'll be your Dixie Chicken if you be my Tennessee Lamb?
Not so far, no.
No? So those are the two bands that really kind of introduced me the first time that I thought, oh, that's really country.
And that predated, like, even Allman Brothers?
I would say probably...
Right around the same time period? Because Allman Brothers, what, 67?
68? The band was before.
Yeah, probably
the
if they were
Brothers
touring with Dylan
and around the same time
okay.
as well, because you know they did that famous movie that Martin Scorsese directed. That's oh god,
Scarface?
No, it's not Scarface. I'll find it while you're talking to me because I can't remember what the name of it right now. But yeah, and it's brilliant. So I thought that we would start with your list and find out what you put on it. I'm curious to
All
see.
Right. Well, number seven, and again, I went with my favorites, not necessarily who I thought was the best, but just, you know, bands that I actually listen to. And number seven on my list, I put the Black Crowes.
Yeah, the Black Crowes are out of Atlanta, and I do agree with you. The Black Crowes probably belong on that list. You know, some of their stuff is cover tunes, I think, Hard to Handle
yep.
is, but definitely an awesome band.
And they
awesome
have a blues
band.
Side, and they even have a country side. Sometimes they go acoustic and have a little bit of that side, but if I were going to classify them, which they probably hate, I would classify them as Southern Rock. So
I would have to agree, and that band movie is called The Last Waltz.
Oh, I have heard of that.
Yeah, I highly recommend it because you're going to see a very young Van Morrison, a very young Neil Diamond. Joni Mitchell performs Coyote on it. I mean, it is fantastic. So way before MTV. Okay, so I would agree with Black Crowes. Next.
Sticking in the Black family.
Yes, Steve Black.
Yes, Blackfoot.
I like Blackfoot. I love Highway Song.
But it goes on and on and on and on and on. Those are the lyrics, by the way.
Yes.
In case the listener did not know.
Also on that album, Blackfoot is Highways or Train.
Train. Yep.
And I do believe that that's Ricky Medlock's grandfather on the harmonica.
Yeah, Shorty Medlock plays harmonica and banjo on a handful of Blackfoot songs. Shorty Medlock was actually a bluesgrass. Hey, I just invented a new genre. Wow. I think he came more of a from a bluegrass background than anything else. But, I mean, he was like a touring artist. And, yeah.
And interestingly enough, Ricky Medlock ended up joining Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah.
And is still touring with them today.
Yep. Before they took their name Lynyrd Skynyrd, Ricky told me this years ago. I did an interview with him at the old Palace of Auburn Hills, that he was the original drummer in the band. And then he left to form Blackfoot, and they brought in another drummer, and then eventually changed their name to Lynyrd Skynyrd. So,
wow, that long ago.
Yeah, that
wow,
crazy
he must have
long
been
ago.
Just a kid.
Yep, a teenager mm-hmm. at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, I do like Blackfoot, and I think they have a lot of songs like Fox Chase that like the average person doesn't know. They probably just know the one or two songs. But yeah, there's some good stuff there. They have a song that's called Diary of a Working Man that just gives you goosebumps. I'm starting to get goosebumps just mentioning the song. But I do. I really, really enjoy Blackfoot's music. Five for me. I just love the guitar work, and I also love that the singer sounded like nobody else. I never heard a Southern rock band that had a singer quite like Molly Hatchett.
Yeah, Molly Hatchett, I think, was one of the bands that invented the term guitar army.
Yeah.
Because there were 50 million guitarists on the stage, all playing at once. I don't know if they were just all their cousins that they invited, hey, yeah, join our band, that's okay. But I mean, their guitar solos, because there were so many of them, just went on. And also the endings of their songs never seemed to end as
right.
well. But Molly Hatchett also was known for their incredible album artwork. There was a guy named Frank Frazetta who they adored, who did this heroic fantasy where the women would be in these skimpy bikinis and very well endowed, usually on top of a dragon or some wild looking animal.
Yep.
And every album cover had this really extreme artwork on it, and you knew immediately it was a Molly Hatchett.
Big muscly
album.
Guys with giant axes.
That's
and,
right.
You know.
Yeah, also from Jacksonville, Florida. And interestingly enough, Ronnie Van Zant from Lynyrd Skynyrd was actually supposed to produce one of their albums before he died.
Mm.
Yeah. So there's your another connection.
Yeah, there's another tie-in.
Lynyrd Skynyrd, yeah.
Yeah. This one to me, you can question because many of their songs have just become Americana at this point. But I put Creedence Clearwater Revival. Do you see them as Southern?
Creedence Clearwater Revival comes up on a lot of these lists. And even though that they're based out of San Francisco, somehow John Fogerty emits the feel of the South like no other band. Because when you hear Born on the Bayou, you believe that he was born on the bayou.
And when I hear Down on the Corner, I picture him in Alabama.
Yes.
I mean, it's just how I hear it.
That guy can evoke a visualization and a feeling through his songs. I mean, Run Through the Jungle, I think, was used in Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
But still to this day, I mean, that's almost like the quintessential 60s song when they're remembering that time period.
Right.
And
as is Fortunate Son, very time-stamped to the 60s.
And somehow Fortunate Son sounds Southern-like. So, yeah, so I think that John Fogerty has a Southern soul.
Yeah, and even, I know it's a cover, but Proud Mary is so Southern.
Yeah.
And they, I think their version was the biggest hit, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I put them on my list of Southern rock. I if somebody did want to come in and argue, I would certainly hear the argument, but that's how I felt.
I would have to agree with you, though. I mean, it's almost irrelevant. Well, you know, we were talking about the band, and a lot of them were from Canada. I mean, not that they don't have Southern music and country music
in
Canada.
Well, they were from Windsor. That's as Southern as you get in Canada. Jeez, that's some, what's the name of that little peak down there? The most southern point in Canada
is Detroit.
No.
Next.
All right. Sorry. I know there's at least one Canadian listener, and I now officially apologize. Number three for me, I think most people would say is way too high on this list. But we're talking about me and what I like, and I like 38 Special.
38 Special is definitely an incredible Southern band. And again, here's your, you know, what is that called? 6 degrees of separation?
Yeah.
Well, it seems like all Southern rock bands somehow lead back to Lynyrd Skynyrd, and that is Donnie Van Zandt is the lead singer of 38 Special.
Yep.
But man, those guys knew how to write a song. I mean, it goes beyond like Rockin' Into the Night, You're My Fantasy Girl. I mean, they, just like Lynyrd Skynyrd, they even had the radio formula down, I think, better than Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah. And there was something I liked about them. They were very concise. They did write sort of radio hits, which is not my normal thing. But then they would go out and tour with two drummers and have two lead singers and two guys who could play lead guitar. And it was just, there was never a boring moment. You didn't know who was going to sing the next song. You didn't know which guy was going to play the solos. And there's two drummers. And it was, I don't know, there was a real... some of this may have to do with the fourth or fifth concert I ever saw, but my very first show at Pine Knob, that was the first band I ever saw at Pine Knob, was 38 Special. And it was just so much fun. I love those songs.
I think that that's an element that Southern rock bands do bring to their shows, is that it is fun. They are having a good time up there.
So number two, we've mentioned, connected to every single band. I have Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah, they say Lynyrd Skynyrd is the consummate Southern rock band. They're the ones who introduced the genre to the rock audience, to America. You know, this is us. Arguably the best Southern rock band because, you know, I mean, the Allman Brothers kind of invented Southern rock.
Right.
But they had some jazzy and bluesy influences, and they love those long, drawn-out...
They also kind of invented jam band.
Jams,
right? Yes. I mean, they did both.
Some of their jazz depended on what they consumed before the show, as to how long they would last. But when you listen to Ramblin' Man and Sweet Melissa, I mean, it really is almost like, the Allman Brothers are the godfathers of Southern rock. And then Lynyrd Skynyrd is the, you know, favorite child.
Yeah. In an interview I did with Joe Satriani, he put it that the Allman Brothers probably invented it, but Lynyrd Skynyrd popularized it.
That's, you know, the perfect way to put
it. And number one for me, again, some people could argue is or isn't. They clearly are as Southern as they can get from the deep part of Texas right down by Mexico, ZZ Top.
Yeah, they call them what do they call them? The big old or little?
Little old band from Texas.
The little, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, ZZ Top is fantastic. I don't know if I would put them at number one, but they certainly are probably, outside the Allman Brothers, my favorite.
Yeah, if we were going to rank, like, you know, most influential, all of that stuff, Lynyrd Skynyrd would be at the top. But if we're talking about what I'm most likely to listen to, if it's supposed to be a list of my favorites, then I got ZZ Top on the top.
I would say probably the most successful, the most extensive catalog, the band that was able to reinvent themselves and still stay true to their sound. I mean, whoever thought when you were listening to LaGrange that this also would be the band that would take over MTV.
Right.
I mean, with the Eliminator. And also had one of the best stage props I ever saw in my life, because in one of their videos, they're walking and they're spinning their guitars.
Yeah.
And on stage, they actually recreated that, where the curtain went up and they were walking. Frank and, no, Dusty and Billy were actually walking on stage. They had treadmills on the bottom of the stage.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so they never stopped walking. And then at some point, you know, during legs, they spun their guitars. Oh, Steve, that audience just about lost their minds. It was incredible to see. It was great because they were really like embracing that whole MTV video genre.
Right.
And then utilizing it. That's what the crowd, you know, they wanted to see. They were... I love that ZZ Top are really cognizant of their audience, you know, and they're not afraid to take chances and go out there, because, again, they stay true to themselves. They're some guys from Texas. They love their sound, and they do it really well.
Yep. Now, we agreed before we started this that we were going to do just bands, not individuals. So if you're out there thinking, what about Stevie Ray Vaughan or... you know,
a Charlie Daniels.
Yeah, Charlie Daniels, or maybe a George Thorogood, who had a lot of more. I'd give him more blues rock than Southern rock. But either way, that's why we didn't go with individuals. We just went with bands.
A band that came up on many lists is the Marshall Tucker Band.
I only know one or two songs.
Can't You See?
Yeah. Yeah.
Green Grass and High Tides Forever.
I thought that was
somebody
the
did
Outlaws.
A remake of it. I think the Outlaws.
Oh, okay.
Oh, am I wrong?
I don't know.
The Outlaws did do that.
Yeah.
I am wrong.
Yeah.
Strike that. Reverse it.
Strike that one.
This is a case of, well, which one's pink? There is no Marshall Tucker.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. The Marshall Tucker Band, Toy Caldwell, is the lead singer, guitarist for Marshall Tucker. And how they got their name was they were rehearsing, and they were trying to come up with the name of the band. So one of the guys looked over on the wall, and in their rehearsal space, which was basically a warehouse, there was a key, and on the key was the name Marshall Tucker. And it was a guy who had rented the rehearsal space before.
Interesting.
So the guy said, why don't we call ourselves the Marshall Tucker Band? And they said, okay. To find out, Marshall Tucker was a real person. He was a blind piano tuner.
Wow.
And they found that out much later.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
So if you and I ever start a band, I'm just thinking out loud here. Let's say
boy.
We have four people in the band.
I'm scared.
One of the people will be named Pink Floyd. One of the people will be named Lynyrd Skynyrd. One will be named Jethro Tull. And one Marshall Tucker.
And Marshall Tucker. Well, actually, Lynyrd Skynyrd was a real guy, too. He was their gym teacher, right?
Right. And Pink Floyd was two real people. Two blues musicians, one whose name was Pink and the other one whose name was Floyd.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's two different blues musicians, and they combined the name. Yeah.
Wow.
And then Jethro Tull was an inventor, like from the 1300s or something, which is, you know, they play Renaissance music, so they're they're into the 1300s. So,
of course, Ian Anderson would come up with that. So the Outlaws, who we mentioned before, Green Grass and High Tides Forever, they come up on as some of the best Southern rock. Black Oak, Arkansas.
Go, Jim Dandy.
Jim Dandy to the rescue. And then you brought up a newer band, Steve, that I'm not too familiar with.
Yeah, it's... Well, there's a couple that I think fit Southern rock pretty easily. The first is Blackstone Cherry. I don't know how many people know Blackstone Cherry, but they are... I mean, they're from Edmonton, Kentucky.
Really?
Yes, because you say Edmonton and you're like, what? Canada? No, they're from Edmonton, Kentucky. And they're just, they're very blues-based. So here's the thing. A lot of the newer bands are so blues-based that are they Southern or are they country? Like, to me, Rival Sons, that fits in very, very well with Southern rock, but it's also blues rock. So it's hard to say. Blackberry Smoke, another really fun band. They're more country rock, but there aren't any sort of current bands that are being played on the radio anyway that are what you would call just right in the heart of Southern rock. But there's a lot of that blues rock, country rock. I don't even know. Is there such a thing as outlaw rock? Because that would be Volbeat. I mean, you think about it. All their songs are about Doc Holliday and you know, 16 guns and 12 bullets. And
yeah. Well, I mean, outlaw country is definitely, you know, a genre in country music.
Yeah.
You know, with, I'm aware of that. Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson and all that stuff. They, you know, they consider themselves outlaws. But yeah, I really think it's the feel. It's the feel of the music.
Yeah.
But and I think it's some of these bands too, where they're going to Nashville.
Yeah.
You know, their country is really blurring the lines between what is pop and what is rock. And I think it's great that they're kind of opening up their doors and letting these artists do what they want to without pigeonholing them. And to know it's got to be this. It's got to be what used to be the twang.
The sound of. The sound of drums. The sound of bass. The sound of vocals.
Is this the real life?
The sound of guitar. Welcome to The Sound Of with Steve Black and Ann Carlini.
Well, the two of us have been watching a fair amount of Olympics. I'm a big Winter Olympics fan. I prefer that to the Summer Olympics, but
I love the Olympics. I have DVR'd every single moment on Channel 4. And what's really cool about Detroit is that we also get the Canadian channel out
right.
of Windsor. So, you know, we get to see their broadcast. But I have just loved every minute. It's been so exciting. And I'm a huge ice skating fan. So I really like the fact that they've changed the rules and now the skaters are allowed to skate to music with lyrics, which I think just adds more and more drama to it. But there was a Hungarian skater who made headlines, I mean, went viral because
yeah.
she came out for her short program dressed in a black leather jacket with a picture of Angus Young on the back. And she had the leather gloves and she skated to Back in Black and Thunderstruck.
Nice.
And just a Twitter went crazy. This girl deserves every medal.
Right.
You know, just for bringing something different, you know, to the arena. But she wasn't the only one who skated to rock and roll. A couple in the pairs competition skated to Disturbed's version of Sounds of Silence.
Right.
Heard more than one Coldplay song. Heard Adele singing, Ed Sheeran. Heard Jeff Buckley's Hallelujah. Even heard Elvis Presley's Can't Help Falling in Love. I mean, these skaters really brought it.
Interesting.
Yeah, really, really interesting. And boy, I'll tell you, some of them were just going right along with the music. There was a ice dancers from Canada.
Yeah.
And they used Rolling Stones.
Ooh.
And
I like that.
Then also used the Eagles' Hotel California into Santana. And I mean, they were right with the music.
Energetic.
And
I like it.
Yeah. And the music just, I think, enhanced the routine. But this meant more than just like entertainment for us. It meant a lot to these bands because they got a big bump
in
sales. Huge.
Because it's not just the U.S. that's showing this on TV. It's everywhere. It's global.
And a lot of people were like going, what's this song?
Right.
So Disturbed, Sound of Silence went right back to number one on the rock charts because of it. All the Coldplay songs that got played, they re-entered the rock charts, even though they're years old. Ed Sheeran, Make It Rain, a song that I was not familiar with, 128% increase in streams. Yeah, so, you know, Even the Elvis Presley tune I mentioned, 61% boost in downloads. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I think it's great for rock and roll, you know, and it's great for these bands to be introduced to a new audience.
Nobody skated to Jethro Tull skating away on the thin ice of a new day.
And I love that song too.
There's your obscure Jethro Tull reference for the week.
Which, and that comes off a damn good album, by the way. One of my favorite Jethro Tull albums.
Pink Floyd has a song called Thin Ice. Trapped Under Ice. Oh my God, Metallica, Trapped Under Ice.
Black Eyes from AC/DC. Okay, let's go.
Yes.
Let's go. Next.
More rumors on a Tool album, and I'm kind of getting to the point of where I'm tired of getting excited about it and then nothing happening. And like, how long is too long?
I think you bring up a really good point. I'm excited to see the band, and if their music wasn't so damn good, and even the last one, Vicarious, still fantastic.
Yeah, the last album, which was 10,000 Days, had probably, if I was going to make a list of my 10 or 12 favorite Tool songs, at least four from their last album. But that was 9 years ago. I think it's been 9 years.
How awesome the freedom this band feels.
Yeah, no kidding.
They can just come and go as they want. I don't know how the other band members feel about it. They certainly don't seem to be pushing to get this new stuff out.
Well, there's a little bit of arguing going on.
Yeah, I think there's more drama in the camp than they want to let on,
yeah,
too.
Like the not that a singer isn't a musician, but just to humor me, it's like the three musicians and the singer. Like the three musicians keep saying that, well, you know, Maynard doesn't have time. And then Maynard would say, well, they never get me the song, so how can I write to them? And so there was not a lot of great communication going back and forth. But what got everybody abuzz this time was it was the singer. It was Maynard James Keenan who said, I have the final mixes of all but one song, so I am writing my vocals to them. That is in process. So we're probably looking at next year, 2019. But I feel like we've been saying that since, you know, 2012.
It's a good sign that A Perfect Circle and Tool are both performing at Rock on the Range.
Right.
But Maynard is a busy boy. Pussifer, A Perfect Circle, just put out brand new music. He's been touring with them.
He owns businesses.
Yes. So almost logically, you have to kind of point to Maynard and go, I wonder if he's the culprit. But again, once the album comes out, we'll all rush to hear it.
Yeah.
So.
And they're really one of the last bands, them and Metallica, that can put out a 6 or 7 minute song and radio will play it.
Interestingly enough, though,
yeah,
Metallica cut back on that. Hardwired to Self-Destruct, their last album.
Yeah, in some places. I mean, they still... Hardwired was 520. And the other song that was even bigger than that was over 5 minutes, too.
The reason we bring that up is because Steve and I are both DJs, and we can tell you the times on every song. But I thought it was super cool, and I was a little taken back that Metallica is going to get a Nobel Prize of Music.
Yeah, now that's in quotes. It's not an actual real Nobel Prize. It is the prestigious Polar Prize, which comes from the same country, Sweden, but it is considered the Nobel Prize of Music. It is an award that really only goes to people that they think have changed the music industry. Some of the people mentioned as past winners were Paul McCartney, Chuck Berry, B.B. King, you know, even Tchaikovsky and Wagner. So, I mean, it goes to like composers and people who literally changed what we view as music. I don't know. Is there anybody left out there who still thinks Metallica is just a hard rock band or a metal band? I mean, they're now being considered in the same category as Chuck Berry and the Beatles, for God's sakes.
This was a statement from Polar Music Prize's website when they announced this, and I'll just read a couple of lines that just struck me. Not since Wagner's emotional turmoil and Tchaikovsky's canons has anyone created music that is so physical and furious and yet still so accessible. In Metallica's world, both a teenage bedroom and a concert hall can be transformed into a Valhalla. The strength of the band's uncompromising albums has helped millions of listeners to transform their sense of alienation into a superpower. Now, if that didn't bring tears to the eyes of those guys in that band, I don't know what would. I mean, what a way to describe your body of work. That, I mean, so incredible, those words, and so powerful.
And accurate. And
yes.
Accurate. I mean, there wasn't a single thing you said in there that didn't resonate.
The sound of.